How far would you go for a mushroom? And you can't find them at the grocery store, but you could also start picking your own, maybe in secret, wild places you wouldn't tell even your closest friends about. Then you could start hanging out at mushroom festivals where you can drink mushroom beer and sing mushroom songs with other mushroom fans. At that point, you might start organizing your travel around mushroom seasons. Well, Eugenia Bone does all of that. She's a food writer and a self-described mycophiliac. Shannon Henry Kleiber caught up with her the day before yet another mushroom expedition, this one to the Sierra Mountains to hunt for morels after a wildfire, with a very big duffel bag.
So morels, certain kinds of morels, grow in copious amounts after a fire. So the fire happens in the summer, and if there's enough rain in the spring, you know, in certain habitats, these morels come up in huge numbers. And for the last, well, quite a few years, I've been going out to hunt whatever burns I could find. And so the Sierras have been happening, burning, for the last few years. So I fly out, and I use my miles, I go on out there, I rent a car with knobby wheels, and we take off into the Sierras, and I bring home very large amounts of morels. I will probably bring 15 pounds of morels back that are fresh, and then more that are dried. So, yeah, I'll have a duffel full of mushrooms. We pick a lot of mushrooms, and it's super fun. Morels, by the way, I think they're like $200 a pound. That's what you'd pay. So you can do the math.
Wow.
Yeah.
Are they your favorite? Do you have a favorite?
You know, I have a sort of top three or four. I love gypsy mushrooms. I love morels. I love porcini mushrooms, the bilitis mushrooms. I love chanterelles. I love hedgehogs. You know, I like all the wild ones the most, but the cultivated, you know, I'm not going to turn up my nose at a nice plate of sautéed champignon.
Oh, that sounds delicious. So tell me about the taste of some of those favorites. Take me through the taste, because they all taste different from each other.
Well, to a degree, right? Mushrooms are mushrooms, so they're...
They have umami, right?
Yeah, they're all this sort of, exactly, this kind of meaty savoriness, and that's thought to be the result of mushrooms contain a kind of pretty high-grade protein. So that meaty savoriness is what you're tasting, that high-grade protein when you eat a mushroom. That's where the umami flavor is thought to come from. One of the main differences, I think, between, say, let's look at maitake, right, which is the Grifola frondosa. It's like this feathery mushroom. It looks like a little hen. You find them under oak trees in the wild, and you can find them in the supermarket, too. They're cultivated. So the wild ones taste, it's like the difference between a domestic duck and a wild duck. The wild maitake are kind of gamier. You taste more different soil-type things, soil and bark and leaves and, you know, worms, and they're more complex in a way, whereas the cultivated maitake, which are grown on a bag of oak chips, they don't have quite the complexity. So that's a distinctive difference. Then, you know, the different tastes between the mushrooms, you know, some are more nutty, like the porcini. Some are more perfumey or fruity, like the chanterelle. The truffles are amazing. They're like pretty much always a combination of certain strong flavors like garlic and B.O. It's always like the B.O. quality. And I think that's what's just so great. People always romance about truffles, saying, it's the, you know, you smell the wet leaves. And I smell like B.O., and it's great.
And you love it.
I do. And they're all like that. Even truffles, I've gone truffle hunting in Oregon. They have other species. The black truffle is like a cross between like a pineapple and a fart. It's just divine. And then there's another one, a little white one. That's really kind of great. That's like a garlicky armpit. I love that one.
A garlicky armpit. That's a great description. So
yeah.
To the very best kind of have that kind of dichotomy of like something amazing and something kind of awful. And it makes the combination powerful.
That's, you know, that's what makes you love / lust it. You know, it's that it just turns people on. I mean, in the past, boy, one time I remember I was at Soma Camp in California. That's Sonoma Mycological Association, and I picked a whole bunch of candy caps, which are great mushrooms. They have a flavor of maple syrup, and they're so cool because that mapley taste, it gets into your bloodstream or something, but it's like when you pee, it smells like maple. I mean, all of your sweat, everything sort of smells like maple. Your sex smells like maple syrup. It's a very cool mushroom on a lot of levels.
That's great. Those are interesting. Where do you get candy cap mushrooms? Do you have to find those in the wild?
Yeah. You know, there's camps and festivals all over the country, by the way.
So how do you love to cook mushrooms? What are your, I love sauteed in butter and onions and garlic and cheese and eggs. I'm just thinking of all the kinds of things I like to cook with mushrooms. What are your favorite ways to cook?
I cook different mushrooms different ways. So the really exciting thing is, you know, you go out, you forage the mushrooms, you bring home a nice haul, and then what's the first thing you make? That's sort of my litmus test. So if I'm collecting the porcini, which we find in Colorado in the West Elks, and these are wonderful, chubby mushrooms that are, we find them at 12,000 feet, pretty high altitude in under conifer. And the porcini, we slice on a, you know, like a mandolin into really, really thin slices. And then we slice Parmesan cheese from a hunk into really thin slices, and then salt and olive oil. And we eat them raw.
Oh, that sounds delicious.
There's not a whole lot of mushrooms that are ideal to eat raw, but these, like morels, if you eat a morel raw, you'll probably get sick from it because morels have to be cooked. But the porcini is fantastic raw. If I get a big load of morels, like the first thing I'll do when I get home after the red eye, after I collect these mushrooms in the Sierras, then I take the red eye home with all of my mushrooms in my suitcase, I'll do one of my favorite dishes, which is in a Dutch oven. I put in a cut up chicken and a stick of butter and a bottle of dry sherry and as many morels as I feel like I can part with at that meal. And I cook it all together and then finish with a little cream and chopped tarragon and black pepper. And it's very luscious and very, I don't know, French, I guess. It's just divine.
So obviously some mushrooms are dangerous. They could kill us. They could make us very sick. How can you tell the difference? And have you had a close call?
You know, I always have thought it's a good idea to try to learn the ones that are poisonous with as much interest and vigor as the ones that are edible. There's not so many poisonous ones. I mean, there's not so many that are going to take your liver out, right, in 36 hours, but there's a few. And learning to identify them, it's just learning how to identify, you know, you're not going to go into the woods and just eat like some berry on a bush, right? You're going to know which, you learn which ones are edible and which ones are poisonous. So it's just a kind of learning curve. But then there's like all these mushrooms, you know, it's a spectrum, right? So there's some that kill you, and then there's some that are really delicious, like truffles, and then there's everything in between. So a typical example would be, you know, those mushrooms that we eat that are considered poisonous, but we eat willingly, like intoxicating mushrooms, or mushrooms that some people eat willingly. Or, for example, the Amanita muscaria, the red mushroom with the white dots. So most of the time people think, oh, that's a poisonous mushroom. But my dad told me this story about how there's this fellow, Nick Mastro Pietro. He lived in Yonkers. He had a Christmas tree farm. And Dad was visiting Nick at the Christmas tree farm, and they were walking around, and Nick points to the Amanita muscaria, the red mushroom with the white dots on it that's growing underneath the Christmas trees. And Nick said, oh, that's a good mushroom. And my dad said, are you kidding? That's a poisonous mushroom. And Nick said, no, it's really good. It's just that every time I eat it, right afterwards, I fall right to sleep. And my dad's like, you're lucky you wake up. Well, it is, in fact, edible. I've eaten it before. So I ate it. It was really great. Promptly, right after I ate it, I fell into this coma-like sleep. I mean, it lasted 3.5 hours or something. It was like the drug they give you when you have to have a colonoscopy. I mean, it was completely out. And I woke up with, you know, one shoe on. Well, but it turns out that this is a mushroom in this capacity that's used with one tribe anyway, the Evan tribe in Siberia, And the mushroom is prepared and used as a sleep aid for elderly people. So when we talk about poisonous mushrooms, it's a spectrum. Like,
so was it
really
a good sleep?
It was a complete and total unconsciousness.
Do you think that in studying mushrooms, there's something we can learn more about ourselves as humans?
For me, I would say, I think there's a lot, but what is most meaningful to me was the realization that what I thought was the world, was really limited by my perspective. And that when I started to get into mushrooms, I realized that there was a lot more to nature than I could see from where I was standing. I had to take that extra step to start learning about it. Because fungi is interesting. They sort of bridge the unseen and seen world. They are microscopic with macroscopic parts, the mushrooms. In a way, like, fungi are like a gateway drug to microbiology, which is this huge subject of great import to the workings of our planet. And just, it's exciting.
Eugenia Bone is a food and nature writer. She's the author of Mycophilia and Microbia, and she's a former president of the New York Mycological Society. Shannon Henry Kleiber talked with her.